All right, so do I have a podcast for you today? It is, listen, today we are going to continue the conversation about human trafficking in schools, sex trafficking of underage children. It is not a fun topic. It is a very difficult topic to talk about. I hope if you're a parent, your ears are open to just listening to this information. If you're a sister or a brother and you have nephews or nieces, this is so important. Just so that you're equipped and you're able to share valuable information to those around you. So I hope you enjoy today's podcast and let's begin. So today I'm going to be reading from this document called Human Trafficking in America's Schools. This was actually created by the Department of Education here in America, and this is actually dated from January 2015, which is just about eight years from today. So this section of the PDF is called Deconstructing Perceptions and a Victim-Centered Approach. So it says, until recently, the trafficking of children in the United States has been clouded by lack of awareness and exacerbated by stigma and denial. Now, communities are beginning to familiarize themselves with the nature of the crime and to train law enforcement, legal, and social service providers on how to protect victims and serve their needs. And this is the part that's really, you know, a major key. Child trafficking is child abuse, and properly understanding this reality allows educators, teachers, come on, and law enforcement and social service providers to minimize judgment, provide services, prevent re-victimization, which is a huge factor when it comes to confronting the issue. And it focuses on the safety and well-being of the boy, girl, or transgender individual. With the passage of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000, the trafficking of children for sex and labor was criminalized, with the crucial caveat that anyone under age 18 who is induced to perform a commercial sex act is a victim of child sex trafficking, regardless of whether force, fraud, or coercion are involved. Unfortunately, local practice and policy sometimes treat the exploited minor in a human trafficking incident where sex is engaged for a profit as a perpetrator of the crime rather than as a victim. It is a contradiction that public outrage occurs when an eighth grader is molested by a family friend, and yet if that same adolescent is sexually abused by a stranger who pays for the sex act, the community often wrongfully perceives the act as willing criminal prostitution. The law recognizes that children cannot give meaningful consent to such a crime. Educators must remember that a child involved in prostitution should always be treated as a victim, and that criminal responsibility rests with the trafficker. And the trafficker, if you don't know the definition of a trafficker, it's basically someone who's involved in managing the actions of the victim. So they take them to the hotel, they tell them what they have to do, they ask for the money, they're really in control of the situation. They might be threatening the person, saying, hey, if you don't do this, I'm gonna go kill your family, I'm gonna go hurt your friends, I'm gonna leak some pictures I have of you. You know, there's like a real high stakes for this child, this minor, and which gets them to this place. So I'm just going to go ahead and continue. So into the risk factors and indicators. So though there is no standard profile of a child trafficking victim, there are several risk factors that make certain children more susceptible to trafficking. Reports indicate that traffickers often target children and youth with a history of sexual abuse, dating violence, low self-esteem, and minimal social support. Runaway and homeless youth male, female, and transgender, are at particularly high risk for becoming victims, though some trafficked youth continue living at home and attending schools. There is also a strong correlation between sexually exploited youth and childhood sexual abuse, chronic maltreatment and neglect, and otherwise unstable home environments. Research findings estimate that between 33 and 90% of victims of commercial sexual child sexual exploitation have experienced these types of abuses. Evidence also suggests that lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, which is the LGBTQ communities, can be up to 5 times more likely than heterosexual youth to become victims of trafficking due to the increased susceptibility that comes with the feeling of rejection and alienation that are often experienced by the LGBT community. So, looking at the possible risk factors associated with child trafficking include the following. So, this is important to know because when you know the risk factors, you can kind of look at a child and gauge, you know, what this child might be going through or the possible vulnerabilities. You know, it's so important to know them because then you can create that relationship with that child as a teacher and able, instead of judging that child and saying, oh, like, you know, they have this issue that makes them weird. It's like, no, now you can respond with a compassionate mindset and say, oh, if they are struggling in this way, like, maybe I can help them in some way. Maybe I can connect them to resources. Maybe I can educate them in regards to just, you know, encouraging them in different ways. There's so many stories of teachers who have presented a major voice in a child's life. Some children do not have valuable adults who invest in them, and so sometimes they run into that validation in schools. They get validated by a teacher who says, oh wow, you're really good at this, or that gives them a compliment on maybe how they dress, or who says, oh, you're kind of like a fashionista, or maybe they compliment their smile, or they compliment their work ethics, or they compliment their personality, or how joyful they are, or how smart they are, how articulate they are, how friendly they are with their friend, you know, whatever it is. Teachers have a voice of that they can use to validate students in their hot mess, because I know that students are not perfect. Every, you know, especially in these days, I feel there is a lot of judgment when it comes to this generation, just because our over obsession with Instagram or Facebook or TikTok and the telephone, you know, there's a whole gap of millennials and Gen Zers, and there's a whole gap in how we all have grown up, and this generation is definitely growing up with a different amount of pressures and different, you know, exposure to the internet and exposure to things at a younger age. So the compassion lens has to be there. If a teacher is just, you know, going into a classroom with the lens of everything, you know, that they grew up with and not understanding and not being compassionate with what students are dealing with now, then it's definitely easier to miss opportunities where you can actually be someone's help, you know, someone's voice of validation in their life. So going back to the risk factors, so here are some of them. So lack of personal safety, isolation, if a child is just not connecting with anyone, emotional distress. There might be someone in the classroom who's just, you see them every day, you see the student, and you're concerned, and because that student's always emotional in a way that is not normal, or even out of the blue, you knew them in the first semester and then you're walking into the second semester and you're like, okay, hold on, this person is going through something, and you know what, it could be hormonal, it could be something going on at home, but you'll never know unless you ask. So another thing is homelessness, poverty, family dysfunction, substance abuse, mental illness, learning disabilities, developmental delays, childhood sexual abuse, promotion of sexual exploitation by family members or peers, and lack of social support. So some of these are things that are inherent in children that they have no control of. So it takes time to kind of see if this person is being subjected to any of these things, poverty, maybe they're wearing the same clothes to school every day, maybe they are a little, you know, they're being neglected, they don't have good hygiene, maybe their backpack is really dirty and messed up, maybe this child has no backpack, maybe they don't have any pencils or crayons or markers. You know, poverty is a huge thing when it comes to being a risk factor to being involved in child sex trafficking, because children are, you know, have needs, or they think it's needs, but they want things, right? And if let's say this child runs away, they need food, they need a place to stay, they need money, they need new clothes. That's a risk. The poverty aspect is a risk factor because they can find themselves in a situation where someone's offering them a quote unquote job, like, go do this job for me and I'll give you this. And that job, quote unquote, includes having sex with a stranger or having sex with multiple people or, you know, doing like a dirty film or, you know, just things that a child shouldn't be exposed to or humiliated in that situation and traumatizing. Those situations are not normal for a child to be in, and we know this, but it's so important to know the key risk factors, because then you're able to see the vulnerabilities, and if you do suspect this person's being trafficked, then you have more of a gut feeling or a conviction if you know the risk, and then you can educate or you can provide some counsel or you can connect them to a social worker who can help them, to provide them with clothes, to provide them with a new backpack. There's so many resources in the community, in nonprofits that provide items, especially to children, whether it's food for the family or anything. These are conversations that are so sensitive because we're talking about basic needs, and sometimes families might not want a handout and they might feel insulted a bit that you might be offering this type of help. But that's why it's so important to be educated and know how to have these conversations. So let's keep going. So social workers who provide services to these victims indicate that feelings of isolation and abandonment are often reported, but that the lack of support network increases the vulnerability to trafficking. It is important to note that many teenage girls may be at risk of being recruited into the commercial sex industry simply by virtue of their normal maturation process, wanting to take risk, feeling misunderstood by their parents, and seeking romantic relationships can increase girls' susceptibility to the recruitment tactics of sex traffickers or pimps. Finding these also suggests that low self-esteem accompanies school failures for girls, and the resulting sense of a lack of self-worth may make them more vulnerable to recruitment. So that's so important to know as well as a teacher, because if you notice someone, a girl or a guy, is struggling in class, with school, that, you know, when we do good and we're accepted and we're getting A's or we're getting a pat on the back, like, good job, you're a smart kid, or whatever it is, that complimenting, that validation, it increases how we see ourselves, right? It increases how we see our worth to what we contribute to and what we will do again. You know, this book, Atomic Habits, says actions that are praised are more likely to be repeated. So something that has a positive emotion attached to it are more likely to be repeated. So as teachers, if you're encouraging your students, like, hey, I see your effort, I know you're trying, hey, maybe you got a C this time, but I believe in you, you can get a B, or you can get a B minus, it doesn't matter, like, encouraging students, like, hey, I care about the grade too, but I see that you're trying your best. I love that you're trying your best. I am so glad that you're here in this class. I'm happy to have you here. Let's do this together. You know, see me after class, see me during lunch. Let's talk. Let's see how I can improve your grade, how I can teach you. Maybe you need a little bit more encouragement. Maybe you need a tutor. Let's see if what kind of resources that we can provide maybe after school to help you. And so being that encouragement for a child and showing them that you want them in class can increase someone's self-worth, in that it creates a positive experience that this person might not be getting. And sometimes school is hard for in general, and when school is hard, you know, most students do not you know, it's easy to kind of fall away. But I imagine that for students who are experiencing human trafficking or are experiencing abuse or neglect at home, it might be even more challenging for them to believe in themselves, that they can understand the work, that they can be involved in studying and actually get good grades. And their brains with trauma, it's developing, you know, it develops hindrances in the mind, and so that trauma can definitely keep them from really being engaged and present, and shy away, and they might not want to make friends because they feel different because of the sexual abuse at home, because of the violence that they're experiencing, because of the humiliation that they're experiencing, the shame, and also the threats of violence. You know, that is crazy to me that these children are going through this and they're just silenced, you know. Society doesn't give an opportunity for these students to really be exposed to kindness. And sometimes, like, that's why it's up to us, you know, it's up to whoever's working with kids to be able to see them and kind and talk to them and see what's going on in this child's life, you know. And children do, you know, I think most children can't hold water, right? A lot of them talk once they trust you. And so if you're able to gain that trust with your students with it, by giving respect, I believe students will open up. They'll give you respect back if they're receiving that same level of respect, if they know that you want them in class. Even if they're being disruptive, you're like creating, you're giving back value to the student, you're investing in them, and that's so important. So I'm gonna go ahead and continue. So it says, however, once a student is victimized, identify him or her can prove difficult for a variety of reasons. The student's reluctance to disclose the problem due to a sense of shame and fear. And number two, the stigma associated with forced prostitution. Three, the power and control of the trafficker's seduction and the manipulation. And number four, the student's inability to recognize that he or she is a victim and therefore is unwilling to seek help. So most children don't, or most people who are victims of trafficking don't really know that they're being trafficked, or they're being, you know, that this is a crime being done against them, that they actually have the support of the legal justice system in that they're being trafficked. So it is a crime against children, and them being a child, they, you know, most of them don't really realize what's happening to them is abnormal until, because sometimes it depends when the trafficking starts. If it starts when they're really, really young, then like 4 years old, possibly their understanding of what's happening is that it's normal to them, but it's, you know, it doesn't make them feel good, obviously, but, and they're being abused sexually, they're being taken advantage of, they're being just abused, and it doesn't help that at school there's no open conversation about this. And I have good news with Florida schools. So the Department of Education in Florida has actually created a law where teachers have to teach human trafficking prevention courses or classes to students so that they're aware of human trafficking, what it is, how they can protect themselves. And that actually started back in 2019, which is so cool that Florida is leading in that way. It's one of the first states in the United States who is moving forward with teaching kids, and they actually have curriculums for kindergarten all the way up to high school. So it's something that they're making children aware about when it comes to sexual abuse and human trafficking, so that there can be a lot more prevention conversations, and that we're taking away the stigma of it, because it's better to have that awkward conversation or have that meaningful, you know, exposure to the child's life than to have that child continue in that situation. So, indicators of possible behaviors for child sex trafficking victims include, but are not limited to, the following: an inability to attend school on a regular basis and or unexpected absences, frequently running away from home, references made to frequent travel to other cities, I mentioned that in the last podcast, bruises or other signs of physical trauma, withdrawn behavior such as depression, anxiety, or fears, lack of control over a personal schedule and or identification of travel documents, hunger, malnourishment, or inappropriate dress based off of weather conditions. So like if it's really cold outside and they're coming in with a tank top and shorts, it's concerning. What's going on? Why is this child dressed, you know, a certain way? Why don't, you know, you're not dressed according to the weather conditions. It could be a red flag that there's something going on at home. You know, this person's not being taken care of with their basic needs. Signs of drug addiction. You know, this is why it's so important not to be judgmental. Drug addiction is a huge part of human trafficking. It's a lot of how it's involved, because traffickers use drugs to maintain their victims, either subdued and controlling them, or it's a way that survivors in the life, quote unquote, in the sex trafficking industry, how they survive, trying to numb, you know, the pain and trying to numb the actions of what they have to do, serving multiple customers a night, possibly. And it's not normal to be doing that. And so drugs is a huge part of when someone is being trafficked, whether they're a child or an adult. All right, returning to the indicators. So signs of drug addiction: coached or rehearsed responses to questions. So if you're asking questions, if you're being curious as a teacher and you're asking questions and it seems very like just the way they're answering seems very rehearsed, it seems very like they're answering in a way that someone like an adult might answer, then that's something to kind of work around and kind of come back to, maybe walking away from the conversation at that moment, but then bringing up another question later, taking opportunities to ask questions and taking opportunities to maybe set time apart with the student, not in a way that makes them get in trouble, but letting them know that you care, letting them know that it's important that they're talking to you, that you're grateful that they're able to open up to you, and that you're there to help in any way, and that you can provide resources if they are in trouble or if they're scared. And so it's important that when you're having conversations, students are aware that it's so good that they're talking, that they're not, well, the threats sometimes, when traffickers are threatening these people, their victims, it could be real. You know, they might hurt someone. It might be the trafficking could be gang related, where they do have connections to their families and they know where the person lives. And so this is why it's so important that you're not in this alone, and that you know your resources in your community, and whether it's the law enforcement contact information for the human trafficking task force, which usually is created in law enforcement, and locally in your local law enforcement, whether it's a victim advocate in the law enforcement, knowing who you can contact if you are in this conversation with a student and they might be trafficked. It's so important that you feel comfortable having the conversation, because you have to know that it's better to expose this trafficking now than to wait and say, well, it's I don't want to endanger them even more, or endanger anyone of their families if they are being trafficked and they're being threatened that they're going to be killed or someone else is going to be killed. It's even more important to get the right people involved, because at this point, it's not just about you having this conversation. It's about saving this child's life and protecting their family as well. If it's their family that's being trafficked, if the child is being trafficked by their family members, then obviously on the Department of Children and Families or Child Services will have to be contacted. And even though it can be challenging for a child to depart from their family, because it's a mixture of feelings when you're removed from abuse or neglectful situations, because there's usually an attachment to that family, and even though they're being removed to protect them, children still have a connection with their abusers. And so it's a very complicated and emotional experience for children, but it's so important that when you're having a conversation like this, you can reassure that child that you're there to help. And it can be challenging, and it could be emotional, but you're gonna help them. And the people that are gonna be connected to their situation, like a social worker, a counselor, is there to provide the best services for that child. And so again, it's important to know your resources. So know who you would contact if you were talking to someone who potentially is being trafficked. All right. And so other behavior issues is uncharacteristically promiscuity and or references to sexual situations or terminology beyond age-specific norms. So it's so important to recognize when someone knows a little too much. When kids have reference to a lot of sex knowledge or information, it's important to know what to do and not to feel awkward in that situation. You are the adult. And if you can show that child that you care and that you're there for them and that you're not judging them, then you might be able to open up conversations about that child's experience and help them get connected to the right resources so that they can be safe. And if a child has a boyfriend, quote unquote, or a girlfriend who's noticeably older, so someone who's picking them up and you notice that, let's say the child's 16 years old and they're getting picked up by someone who's 25, it might not be weird at first, but then you remember that she said, oh, it's my boyfriend picked me up, or you remember that he said, it's my girlfriend picked me up. Then that's a red flag, because if it's an older person, sometimes when it comes to trafficking, there's absolutely no face that we could say, hey, this is what a trafficker looks like. It's actually known that traffickers are between the age of 20 and 30s. It's huge during this time. In those age groups, human traffickers are young, And it's, you know, you don't think, you think it's going to be like a 40-year-old. Sometimes it is 40, 50, like there's no limit. It could be a grandma. It could be someone who just wants some cash and they're like 80 years old, or, you know, it doesn't, it literally doesn't matter their age. But if you see someone who's 16 dating someone who's 25 or 30 or plus, it's a red flag. All right, and then other risk factors or things to pay attention to: a sudden change in attire, behavior, relationships, or material possessions. So again, if you see someone in one semester wearing clothes, just normal clothes, and the next semester all of a sudden they're more promiscuous, their behavior is changing, their relationship, their material, like they're bringing in a Gucci purse and it's real, or they're bringing in, you know, some really expensive jewelry, it's, you know, or their nails are done, they have eyelashes, there's just certain things that children can't afford when they're, you know, in your teenage years, unless they're working full-time, or I mean unless they're working part-time, or they're saving, or they have, you know, parents that can afford that. But if you notice these changes, that a child all of a sudden has expensive possessions, ask them about it. Just say, oh wow, I noticed your purse, or I noticed this, or I noticed that, that's interesting, you know, where are you getting that, or who's giving you that, or is it a gift, was that something you bought yourself? And kind of, you know, again, reassuring them that they're not in trouble, you're just interested in having, you know, you're just curious. And another red flag is an attempt to conceal scars, tattoos, or bruises. So that's huge. And that attempt could be, you know, always wearing long sleeve clothing, even if it's really hot outside. The tattoos could be with makeup. Bruises, it could be with makeup as well, you know. With bruises, if you notice, you know, someone bumps into someone and they start screaming, ow, you know, like you hurt me, and it wasn't like a big bump, you know, just investigate. Take time to investigate. Let it be something that raises your eyebrow, and don't be afraid to ask the questions, because you are the adult in the room. And I don't know about in your state, but in Florida, as an adult, you're a mandatory reporter of abuse or suspect of neglect. So it's so important to be involved in your students' lives. Just casually asking questions, being curious, knowing who your students are. I know you have a lesson plan to write, and teachers are given so much work to do. I know most teachers don't even go home after the bell rings. They stay after grade papers and making sure that they have their lesson plans for the next day. The teachers work so hard. And it's crazy how much amazing work you guys are doing out here for the students. And it's beautiful, to be honest. It's so beautiful. It's a lot of work. It's genius work. I'm amazed by teachers. But I think because you're in a environment that you might be used to, whether you've been teaching for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, it's your norm at this point, just teaching and knowing kids and, you know, engaging your classroom, making sure your classroom's in order. So sometimes when we're in our routine and everything's normal, red flags can go over our head, because it just kind of merges into the background, like, oh yeah, well that's just what they're going through. And it's like, no, if we stop and take a moment and say, hey, like, let me dig into this, let me be a little investigator, put on my Sherlock Holmes hat and just ask a question, and not do it publicly, you know, like as private as it can be, because you don't want children to be gossiped about. You don't want to turn an opportunity into a negative experience for a child. So always make sure you're careful with your conversations about about the child, whether it's, you know, asking them about a tattoo, asking them about new products, or, you know, if it is in a public setting, that you're doing it in a careful way, and then taking time to get that child separated or alone so you can have that one-on-one conversation with them in a safe space, so they're not exposing or talking about things that they don't want other people to know about. So that's important as well, having discretion, having consideration for other ears that are listening and the child's reputation, because children do have reputations to keep up at school, and they have an image, and this is a time where you're developing that confidence in yourself, the self-esteem that we talked about earlier. So you never want to embarrass a child for things that are happening in their household, or the potential for example, like the poverty situation. Like, you don't want to bring embarrassment to children, because it's going to shame them from talking about what's happening, and it's going to alienate them and isolate them from the other students in the classroom. So make sure that you're doing it in a gentle manner, without any discrimination, without judgment in your tone or your eyes or your face. Make sure your eyebrows are not making this, you know, kind of like a grumpy look, so that you're judging them. You know, you have to make sure that you are someone that they can trust, because if a child trusts someone, then you can really validate their value as a person, and that they don't have to be in a bad situation, that there's so many resources in the community and in this world that can help them, and there's people who care. There's people even outside the school who care about this issue in their life, and they don't have to suffer by themselves. And you don't have to be the professional that does everything for them, but you can be the person that connects them to the professional that helps them. All right, so it's so important that you stay in a present mode where you can catch the reality of what these children are going through. So we're already at like 43 minutes for this one episode, and so I'm gonna cut it off right here. And there's still so much that I can talk about, because there's still a list of other red flags, but I think this is plenty for today. I wanted to bring up really quickly this TED talk that I heard today by a doctor named Kanani Titian, which she spoke about when she first learned about human trafficking. And when she learned about human trafficking, she was able to identify her patients who were actually being trafficked more easily. And when she was training other doctors, future doctors, on how to spot trafficking, they asked her, how come it is that you see so many trafficking patients? And she said, no, it's just that I've learned to spot the signs, and I've learned to see them. And so it's not that she was running into a lot of patients just casually that they were being trafficked, but it's that she learned the signs, she learned the red flags, and that really helped her to be able to connect survivors to resources and help them get out of the trafficking lifestyle. So one of the verses that I wanted to say today was the verse Colossians 3:23. It says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord. And it goes on to say that he rewards those, he rewards you for your work. He sees you working really hard. And there's another verse in 1 John 3:18 that says, dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with action and in truth. So I like this, because I think a lot of times we do want to be a hero, or it's not enough basically to just do things with words. So if you, for example, are gonna follow up with the student and you say, hey, meet me after class, I want to talk to you about something, and then all of a sudden you get this huge report that you have to do, and now you're like, man, I really need to do this report instead of talking to this student, you know, stick to your word. I know it's hard, but make a sacrifice in that moment instead of knocking that student and saying, hey, you know, actually, this isn't the right time, talk to me tomorrow. You don't know if that student's going to be back tomorrow, especially if they're being trafficked and they're not in school all the time. Take advantage of that they're present there and then, and also acknowledge that you made a promise to them. Because if they do, if they are deciding to trust you and they're going to see you after class to have that conversation, then, you know, make it your effort to do that and not just fail them with just words. I care, but then you never take action to actually help them. So follow up and make sure they know that you're there for them. Thanks for listening to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. Let me know your thoughts. Leave me a comment. Leave me a review. And I'll definitely look at it. I'll read it. Digest it. Think about it. Meditate on it. Just thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time to invest in the future of children by educating yourself and by having this knowledge. You are getting some resources, or you're being resourced to be able to tackle the issues of modern day slavery, which is a huge, huge, huge topic that we could talk about forever, but it's really dark. And we have to just stick it in there because we are meant to be the salt and the light and to actually make a difference in this world. So I believe in you. I believe you can be an agent of change. You don't have to wait to know everything. You can just act even by just being curious and by talking to other adults, other professionals in your whatever industry you're in about human trafficking, or getting educated, reaching out to local trainings that are potentially in your community about human trafficking, child abuse, prevention, and all these things. In South Florida, there is so many resources, like it's crazy. But there's definitely online resources as well. So stay connected, increase your learning in this this thing, because it's present. It's happening around us. It's happening in our communities. It's happening right now as we listen to this podcast. And that should motivate us to continue to want to make a difference, to want to make a change. So I give you props for listening. Let me know if you have any questions. You can message me at GalRestore on Instagram. I'm there. I'll be checking those messages. And if you have any questions, follow-up questions, let me know as well. Have a great rest of your day or evening, wherever you're listening. If you're walking, if you're in your car, if you're cleaning your house, I hope you're enjoying yourself. Take care. Talk to you next time on the Galvanize and Restore podcast. Bye.